Well, hello again, and welcome to another episode of the Hyperion Adventures Podcast. I'm Tom. As always, I'm with my wonderful, intelligent, gorgeous, very hardworking, earth-friendly, theme park-loving wife and co-host, Michelle.
Thank you, sweetie. Hi, everybody.
You just never know where I'm going to go with these things.
So know it.
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're more often they're
No.
At least Michelle is good. That's most important.
No. I love the spontaneity from
you. Yes. Okay. Thank you for joining us today. We are recording this episode on Sunday, April 21st, 2024. And we appreciate that you've come along with us on another journey through the Hyperion Adventures podcast. You can find us pretty much everywhere you get podcasts. However, the very best place to find us is on our own website, HyperionAdventuresPodcast.com. Also, we are on social media. We are on Twitter.
You mean X?
I mean Twitter. At Hyperion Podcast, just so people can actually find us.
On X.
Wherever that may be. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. If you are on Facebook, come on over and join us for some good, positive Disney energy fun on our Hyperion Adventurers Facebook group. Also, we're on YouTube. If you want to find us there, we're at Hyperion Adventures Podcast. And if you ever want to contact us for any reason, please hit us up at our Gmail account, HyperionAdventuresPodcast@gmail.com.
Right. You can contact us through any of those ways for anything. We do like it, too, if you... You know, feel free to participate in whatever we're talking about for our episodes.
Speaking of that, we did get a little delayed participation in last week's episode. Of course, when it was 70s hits that we wish were Disney songs.
Yes.
We had Charles from the Conversations podcast who chimed in and said he thought that Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive would work great for, of course, Emperor Sheev Palpatine, who somehow finds ways to return.
Yes. And he also gave you kudos for pretty much pronouncing your French phrases. Just learn to roll your R's a little bit better.
Yeah, I can't do that. So yes, sorry, you Charles. You're going to get what you're going to get from me.
But I am glad that he brought up about Palpatine, because they recently did an episode about, or I guess it's their first episode about Palpatine. I think they have some more planned in the future.
Yes, because he's quite a topic to discuss.
He is.
There's a lot there. If you're a Star Wars fan, you know Palpatine. There's a lot there to go through.
Yeah. As Pat said, that jerk.
That jerk.
Palpatine.
Was he talking about Charles?
No.
Pat, how could you do that?
No, he was talking about Palpatine. But anyways, it's really an interesting segment, to be sure. And if you haven't listened to that yet. Oh my gosh, this is how we're
off to
go.
A roaring start as we always are every week.
Yeah. Anyways, listen to Conversations podcast. Yeah. It's always entertaining and educational for sure.
And we have plans to bring them on the show here coming up very, very soon.
Yeah. Yes.
Michelle's already shot a topic their way, so hopefully they'll be joining us here in the coming few weeks. And that's exciting for us because they're two of our favorite friends, even though I give them a hard time here. They are just wonderful, wonderful people.
Yeah, they are. They are very special.
Yeah. So now before we get into this week's show, you know, we always like to take a little pause down and take a look back at the week that was, because this is the Disney podcast of positivity. So we like to focus on those high moments, those wonderful moments, those positive moments from the prior week. We call it my favorite thing from this week. And when we do this, we always start with Michelle, because you heard it last week. She has the best lists. You're about to hear it here in this episode. She definitely does the best research. She also has the best my favorite thing from this week. So Michelle, what was your favorite thing from this week?
Well, I think I have a lot of things that were very positive during the week, but I think I will bring up one that actually just happened yesterday. And it was, I think, kind of a trend that we got with the continuation of some positive luck with Disney reservations, and that is that we had our wait list for some additional time at the resort for our upcoming holiday weekend.
Yes.
Added. So
the holiday is Michelle's birthday, by the way, just so you know what that holiday might be. Yes, coming up here in May.
We have Memorial Day weekend.
A little jaunt out to Walt Disney World.
Yeah, and so we had a wait list that we added actually not too long ago. And fortunately, that got approved. And so we get to have an extra little bit of time there at the parks. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we had already booked a period of time that we'd be spending there. Mm-hmm. But we were able to add on an extra day thanks to the wait list coming through for us. That was great. Yeah. Yes, that was one of my favorite things from this week as well.
Cool.
And the other favorite thing from this week, which was kind of a dorky thing, but I thought was kind of fun and actually was kind of happening about the same time that this wait list went through for us, was that I took Michelle out, and she had never been, you may remember, if you've been listening to this show long enough, when we first moved to Florida, I was working for the post office for not very long, but for about 3 months, I was working for the post office, and I would do several routes during the post office. And there were a couple that I would do most frequently. I'd never taken Michelle out to see what those routes entailed, what they were. And so we kind of just took the day out. We had something else we wanted to pick up. And so while we were out, I'm like, you know what, let's go ahead and I'll show you where these are, and kind of just led her through the routes as they were that I would go on a daily basis while I was working for the post office.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I actually almost said that one, but I kind of thought you might use that one. But yeah, it was a lot of fun that you did get to show me, and I learned a lot about the Postal Service and how they actually formulate the process for the routes, etc. And I learned a lot about the city that we're in, not knowing that there were sections of towns that had themed street names. So that was pretty fun to find out.
Section that was like golf named, a section that was bird named, some that were tree named. I mean, it's pretty funny when you go through some of these areas. There's apparently the French and Native American War,
right?
Because there's a section of it that's all French named right next to the section that's all Native American named.
But it's pretty interesting. I just didn't know that there were these subsections of the town that had these themed street names. So that was pretty funny too. But it was fun. Just kind of, it's not something that we do very often, but just to kind of go ride around together and sightsee or whatever, however you want to call it, but just spend the time together. And it was really a lot of fun.
It was a fun little tour. It took us a couple hours to just kind of go through there. And the best part about it is it wasn't a 10 to 12 hour day for me delivering mail and then going off to help others deliver mail and whatever else might be. We just got to go through it and then go enjoy the rest of our day.
Right, exactly. So no, it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. It was fun for sure. So let's go ahead and get on to this week's show. We have lots of stuff for you this week, including Disneyland takes a giant step forward towards its park expansion, sort of expansion. We'll tell you about that. A pair of Disneyland tours are set to return. Speaking of the happiest place on earth, those are going to be fun as well. Mm-hmm. And a Disney dining locations earns a couple of the highest awards that can be earned by a dining establishment. We'll tell you about that as well. But that's later. Let's go ahead and get to our very eco-friendly main topic of the week. So for this week's main topic, as we are recording this episode, tomorrow happens to be Earth Day. Mm-hmm. Yes. On April 22nd, that is Earth Day. It is also the Animal Kingdom Park, Disney's Animal Kingdom Park's birthday.
Yep.
So happy birthday to the Animal Kingdom Park. We will be out there on Tuesday to explore
experience.
It a little late. It's a little delayed celebration for us, but it'll be fun just the same. But, you know, it's all about Earth Day here, and Disney does some things, maybe some obvious things and some not so obvious things in their theme parks, their cruise lines, so forth, that really, yes, they do help with the planet, help sustain the planet, but they also do a lot of things that kind of, as they're doing this, help also sustain the Disney magic, right?
Yeah,
Michelle?
For sure. And that's kind of where we wanted to take a look this year at Earth Day and Earth Month is kind of looking at how they do that, how they cross those two things together.
Yeah. So, and this is going to be great because Michelle's done another research piece, and you know, Michelle does the best research. So I'm excited to find out the interesting things. I know she's done a little bit of talk about conservation of the Disney parks a few years ago, but some things have been updated, and I'm sure she should discover some new stuff that we haven't heard before, but can't wait to hear it all. So Michelle, go ahead and lead us through It's a Small World, Sustaining Disney Magic Through Conservation.
Well, thanks, honey. And you know, the goal here, and, you know, of course, if we don't get off on some kind of tangent, is, you know, really to kind of take you to behind the scenes look at just a sampling of some of Disney's conservation efforts in the parks. Like Tom mentioned, I know we've talked about conservation efforts. Some of them were, you know, more global things. So I thought it'd be kind of nice to take a look more locally at the parks and tied in the cruise line a little bit too there as well. But, you know, just so to help you also appreciate when you're in the parks, how that fantasy world of storytelling really does intersect with the environmental stewardship to make sure that the magic lasts and goes on for generations.
Nice.
To come.
Can't wait to hear it. I know I'm going to learn a ton from this. As I always do from Michelle's research pieces.
But I think at first it's important to recognize that Disney had set out several years ago their 2030 environmental goals, which focused on like greenhouse gas emissions, water, materials, and sustainable design. And we're, as I mentioned, this is going to be a sampling of things. Mm-hmm. But I do want to point out some that just seem like really ambitious goals, and 2030 isn't that far away.
Yeah, it'll be here before you know it.
I know. So of the goals I thought I wanted to kind of incorporate in today's presentation is like the net zero greenhouse gas emissions for direct operations, net zero. Purchasing or producing 100% zero carbon electricity for all direct operations. And zero waste to landfill for Disney's wholly owned and operated parks and resorts. So, as I mentioned, pretty ambitious.
Those are extremely ambitious. I don't know if they can accomplish it, but if any steps they can make towards that, if they could do it, awesome.
Right.
Any steps you make towards that is all for the better, for sure.
Exactly. And these are some things that we're going to just share with you. Like I said, some behind the scenes things that you might not know, how they kind of built some of this sustainability within the parks. And it kind of starts right at the beginning when you get to the parks and you take the trams. And knowing that those trams are running on compressed natural gas. And what that does is reduce diesel consumption by 56,000 gallons each year.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a lot. Now, next is the monorails. And I don't know if you knew this, honey. I didn't. They've been zero emission transportation since they started in 1959. So emitting no direct exhaust or pollutants.
Well, they're all electric, so I guess it sort of makes sense, but yeah. I never really thought about
right,
it.
Right,
right.
And
point.
That's what
yeah.
I said. These are things, it's like, okay, some may be apparent, some may not, but it's like, yeah, I didn't think about this. Back in 1959, they were producing zero emission transportation at the parks.
All the more reason to expand the monorails even more.
I know.
More transportation through monorails exactly. And electric trains and so forth. Yes.
Yes. And now attractions like the Finding Nemo submarine voyage, they feature some innovative technology. Any guesses on that, honey?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I can't wait to hear.
Magnetic coil propulsion.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, I know, right?
Who thought those were that advanced? Wow. I had no idea.
I know. I know. You know, and I know magnets are used in the design of the roller coasters and everything and some other attractions as well. They're utilized to help propel things quickly. Very scientific, kind of beyond my non-engineering brain, but still just like Finding Nemo submarine being magnetic coil propulsion, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I had no idea. No clue.
All right. You ready for a trivia question?
Oh, no. I'm not. I am really not.
I think you might know this. I'm kind of thinking this. Okay. So the Disneyland Railroad and the Mark Twain Riverboat use fuel made out of a specific sustainable substance since 2009. Any ideas?
I'm going to guess they use like the French fry grease.
Right. The cooking oil. Yeah. See, I thought you might know this one.
That was just a complete guess, but knowing that that can be reused as a fuel base, that's what I guessed.
No, it's like the Back to the Future kind of thing, right? But yeah, that in of itself saves approximately 200,000 gallons of petroleum diesel each year.
Plus, it's a way to recycle and reuse although when they're frying up those great chicken tenders that we love, and the French fries and Michelle's hush puppies and all this stuff. Great way to reuse that oil. Yeah.
Now, I know Radiator Springs Racers is one of our favorites, and I know you love that in Cars Land. Mm-hmm. And how about this? Part of their power comes from the sun. They have 1,400 solar panels helping get some of the power for those racers.
Huh, I've never seen the solar panels.
I know. I know.
Where are they? So we've been on both sides of that attraction. I don't ever remember seeing solar panels there, but I believe it. I just have never seen them.
I know. So it's just kind of cool how it's like storytelling within storytelling. And I might say this over and over in this episode. But now, another attraction, and well, let me just first say that it was recently reported, first in the LA Times, that because of their zero emission goal, Disney Company is planning to, as they put it, electrify the Autopia attraction.
Yeah, which I think people have been hoping for a long time.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, anybody who has stood in that queue waiting and you're smelling the exhaust and the noise level, et cetera, is you've always probably recently felt like, hey, there's something better out there for sure. So they haven't given details of, you know, a timeline or whether it's going to be fully electric or hybrid vehicles or whatever. But at least it's good to know they are looking to see how they can also incorporate their goals within that attraction.
I think the question with that has always been, how do you keep those cars? Because it's, you know, you got to keep it going, keep it running, right, running for hours, you know, and how do you keep those cars charged and running for that extended period of time on a battery power or some sort of electric power? So exactly. I know that a lot of the electric cars and other ways, they're finding better ways to extend the life of the batteries or extend the life of the charge within them. So hopefully by the time they get this developed, they can work it out for those cars, or at least be able to swap them in and out and then, you know, charge them up in a short amount of time to get them back on the course.
Right. Yeah. You know, this is kind of a side. It's not necessarily associated with this topic of conservation, but as I was doing the research, I ran across how when they made Autopia, when Disneyland first opened, they put it in Tomorrowland because the concept of highways was still very new in this country. And so it was kind of futuristic, the idea of having cars on traveling through the highway. And that's kind of what they try to produce, that kind of a look. And now, fast forward to now, is electronic cars are now, I mean, they're here now, but for a lot of people, for most people, that isn't what they're driving. So this might be another opportunity of kind of incorporating that theming of tomorrow, of futuristic Tomorrowland, of introducing people to newer things or something like that.
I guess
like
it's
that.
Better to be in Tomorrowland, because originally the Autopia, there were two Autopias at Disneyland. One in Tomorrowland, it's like dreaming of the highways of the future. One in Fantasyland. We don't want to believe that the electric car is being a fantasy. Eventually, they did combine both those tracks. That's why when you go to Disneyland and ride the Autopia as opposed to the Tomorrowland Speedway, it's a more extended, leisurely, because basically it's two rides put into
exactly,
one.
Exactly, yes.
It's a better version of it. Again, still, they could do without the gasoline powered cars, it is a better version of that attraction for sure.
Right. So, since we're talking power here, I thought it might be a good time to talk about something that, you know, again, power is necessary. It isn't cheap. It isn't easy, but they have to deal with it. But back in 2020 in Orlando, the company brought online a new solar facility, and it actually generates enough power from the sun to operate two of their four parks. I mean, think about it. That's pretty incredible solar power. It's a lot of power.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're talking about, let's just say, Animal Kingdom Park, which probably uses, I would think, the least amount of power of the parks, just because of, you know, it's mostly about the animals and everything else. So you don't need as much, and it's not open usually as late as some of the other parks or whatever. But still, just think about how much power that takes when you're going through there and all the electronics that are working there and all the animatronics and everything else, the lighting and the air conditioning when you're inside and all that stuff. It's pretty impressive that, they have solar fields that can basically power up two entire theme parks.
So, you know, to try to put it into another perspective, it reduces greenhouse gas emissions by more than 50,000 tons a year. So what does that mean? Well, it's like removing 10,000 cars from the roads each year.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah, I know.
That's great.
Right. Now, because of Earth Month, some people may have heard in the news a story that came out, and it's kind of near and dear to our hearts because we're very much in love with Fort Wilderness Cabins and Campground. So for anyone staying out there, this might be something that also sparks your interest. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think this actually has two things we love involved with it. One, the Fort Wilderness Campground. Two, bottles, but especially wine bottles in general. If it's the story I'm thinking of, I think they have something to do with one another there.
Right. Well, and this is going to also be another one of those examples of great storytelling producing even better storytelling. And it relates to this pilot project, as I mentioned, at Fort Wilderness Cabins and Campgrounds. They decided as part of this pilot program, I think it was in 2022, that they were going to collect glass placed in the recyclable bins at the cabins. Now, at Fort Wilderness. Now, if you've ever stayed at Fort Wilderness, you've probably seen they have outside receptacles where you can put your trash and another one for recyclables. And so what they did was they got a glass pulverizer and they put the glass that they got from these recyclable bins and it pulverized them to this substance. It's kind of like tiny rocks or coarse sand. And so it's rounded, no sharp edges. And they started using it in the campground areas to fill in holes that were like on gravel roads or where the horseback riding trails were, you know, and they found that was a great substance for that. Well, here's where it gets interesting. So in early 2023, Disney did a story about this, and in some of the local news channels actually covered this story and put it on the news. Well, Debbie Mola Mickler, who was the area manager at Disney's horticulture, she said, quote, "I was home watching the news and I saw this guy Jared, who is part of the program, talking about the new pulverized glass initiative." And interestingly, she had met Jared years before when he was an intern. And so she reached out to him and said, "You know what? I think this substance might be good at the Walt Disney World greenhouses." Now you can imagine those greenhouses, that's a lot of property. They're growing all the plants used in the parks to decorate and everything. And so she brought him by and, you know, kind of showed him the area. And he said, "Well, in order for that to work, we need more glass." And so they actually explored some additional sources for glass. So they got the catering division, who's now sending all of their glass recyclables from their events there. And at Epcot, they're also getting glass, recycled glass from Epcot Center. So it's, again, cool how their storytelling about this pilot project created another story, which is how they now are expanding the use of this great program into other areas of their properties.
Yeah, and hopefully they can expand it even more, find new ways to use it. But I think it's fascinating to think about because, you know, when you think of glass, where does it come from? Well, glass is basically sand that's been heated to a point that it becomes
Right.
Glass.
Right. That's true.
That's where it comes from. And then when we're getting done with it, we're pulverizing it to the point that it can be reused. It's not as fine as sand, but into a similar way that you would use sand. So it's kind of, you know, returning to where it initiated originally.
Exactly.
Which, you know, again, recycle, reuse. It's all great.
I know. I'm
a big fan of that. And I think that's fantastic.
Right. Right.
Hopefully, you know, again, when Disney does some of these things, a lot of other people pick it up. So hopefully, I mean, I can't say that Disney did this, was the first company that did this. There probably were other companies that did this first. But when as high profile a company as Disney is doing this, and it's getting into the media and people are noticing it, other companies are like, hey, you know, we could do something like this too.
Exactly.
And add it to a repertoire. Yeah. And it becomes much more widespread and they find new and different ways to use things like this. That's great.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Well, like I said, just the horticulture area at, you know, Disney World, to have that as, you know, part of the flooring on the ground, that can be replicated in other areas of, you know, where you have greenhouses, et cetera, and other, of course, other things too, but just thought it was so cool. And, you know, I think the other thing that's really, really neat about some of these things is that it's the cast members that are the ones kind of behind, you know, getting some of this. Obviously, yes, the Disney company has their goals and how they're going to roll out things. But then, you know, just from a single person, you know, being able to come up with an idea and have it become so instrumental.
Yeah, very cool that, you know, they can pick up this information and move it and figure out new and unique ways to use it within that maybe they haven't discovered before.
Right. So since we're talking about recycling, let's look at costumes, you know, and I think we've talked a little bit about costumes, but found a couple other little newer things to share with folks. The Tron Light Cycle runs are, cast member costumes are made from recycled polyester. And that's not all. Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewinds, 70% of each costume's base fabric is made from recycled material. And the metal buttons are made from 75% recycled metals. So pretty cool. Yeah. And even the PhotoPass green costumes are made from recycled materials. But here's the one that really blew my mind when I heard this one. The food and beverage team at Walt Disney World wears aprons made of 100% recycled materials. So that means each of those aprons kept 50 plastic bottles out of landfill.
Oh, that's great. That's exciting. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I know. Well, let's not forget Disney Cruise Line, as I mentioned earlier, on the newest ship, the Wish. And I know as they were rolling that out, they were sharing that there are a lot of efficiencies built in. That's one of the most efficient cruise ships out on the seas. But in terms of their show, for example, Disney's The Little Mermaid show, 60% of all the fabric used in there is made from plastic debris recovered from the ocean.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
I know, right? Yeah. So they got the Whosits and Whatsits and Thingamabobs, and they melted them, and it came up to threads that were actually like fine silk, chiffon, and cotton. So when you're watching those shows, know that there's a little hidden story inside their storytelling of Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of, of Ariel collecting a lot of junk from the ocean.
Right.
But like, as you were mentioning there, you know, a lot of those thingamabobs or whatever being put right into a different use is fantastic. Anything to help get the plastic out of the ocean is amazing. Disney Cruise Line does so many things. I mean, because the cruise industry in general is not the most green industry, that's for sure. So anything that they can do to make it that much more closer to carbon neutral, Disney has always been, since they started their cruise line, in the forefront of that, of trying to make that a goal and make that important within them, and they continue to do so. And now that the fact that they're putting in even more efficient green not green, but right. You know what I'm saying. Yes, eco-friendly sure. cruise ships and plans into effects with their cruise ships is amazing, especially as they're adding to their fleet.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I didn't bring into this episode a lot of the like technical aspects of what they do with heating and cooling and how they capture energy efficiently to do that. But just know that there's a ton of that stuff going on too. But I just thought this was pretty cool that that you know, like you said, they're really making sure they're minimizing waste. Yes. Also, so now not only are the costumes made from recycled materials, but they can also be recycled materials. Mm. So, for example, at Tokyo Disneyland Resort and Disneyland Paris Resort, they had put out special edition lines of merchandise that, you know, featured things like tote bags, backpacks, those kind of things that were created from the fabric of cast members' former costumes.
Wow.
Yeah. So talk about circle of life.
Yeah.
You know, and another example kind of similar to this is when Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland Paris was undergoing some renovations back in 2021. It was covered with a very large tarp. Now, you know what I'm talking about, those tarps that are designed to look like the thing that they're covering.
Right. So it looks like they do that a lot with the castle. They try and make it look like the castle's right. there when you know it's behind, you know, a big tarp as they're actually doing some work on it.
Exactly. So, and if you know Disneyland Paris Sleeping Beauty Castle, it's a big castle. It's big. Tall and everything.
It's a big,
so,
beautiful castle.
Lots of tarp there. And a very decorative tarp. Well, what do you think they did with a lot of that tarp?
Oh, what they did with it. I was just assuming you were going with it, that the tarp was created from recycled materials.
No.
No, I don't know what they did with the tarp after it was done.
So cast members came up with something to do. What they decided was it would be good is to, again, use that material to make other products, such as tote bags, duffel bags, briefcases, pouches, things like that. Had a special edition. And rather than it going into a landfill, it was made into these products that now became really cool mementos for people to say, you know, I
kind of owned a piece of the castle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I thought, how creative and how fun. And again, a great way that, again, lots of tarp, right?
Mm-hmm. Lots of tarp.
All right. So we're going to get into food now.
Okay.
We always love food talk, right? But, you know, kind of looking at the ways of reducing waste to landfills, right? So we're going to call it the food journey that Disney takes with food. And so step one, when they're looking at food, their journey starts with menu planning, obviously. They want to predict how many meals are going to be served in the park each day, because that's the best way to produce or to avoid waste, I should say. And so obviously they have a lot of data and they can figure out pretty close what they need, but it's not an exact science.
No, I mean, just the you just don't know for sure what the clientele for that day, but also temperature can be different. I mean, you're going to gravitate towards different foods
right.
depending on how warm, how cold the day is at the parks.
Right.
You can kind of guesstimate around that, but definitely not a perfect science.
Exactly. And so, as some people may know, as this journey of food goes, that some of the prepared but not served meals that are definitely eligible for human consumption, as they say, are donated to local food banks. So it's not going to landfills. It's actually serving the community. But in the food preparation, there's also, you know, scraps of food and things that don't get put as part of what's served. And what I found out is that each park throughout the world has their own different specific destination for that food, but it has to do with energy creation. So it's not going to a landfill. And now there was a lot of information that my, again, non-engineering brain, I'm not saying I'm stupid, but it's just, it was a lot. But
you're definitely not stupid.
But I do want to try to put it into perspective what these food scraps and everything can turn into. So at Disneyland Paris, they recover up to 93% of their food waste, which is transformed into energy through biomethanization.
Wow.
I know.
I'm impressed that you were able to say that. I would have stumbled all over that.
And so, again, how do we look at this and say, well, what does that mean? Well, just in 2019, for example, that food waste process produced the equivalent of energy for 229 families for an entire year.
Wow. For an entire year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. I know. So, I mean, again, it's not only preventing waste from going into landfills, it's helping feed the community, and it's helping produce clean energy.
Yeah. Reuse, recycle. It's right. All a part of it. Yeah.
So, and so now to wrap it up, I did also want to mention something because it's going on right now in the parks. If you walk around and take notice, you might see these white gourd looking things. Do you know what I'm talking about, honey?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about, especially this time of year.
Yeah. What?
Well, so those are the purple martin nests.
That's right. That's right. Those purple mountains?
Yes. Martin.
Martins. They travel to Walt Disney World more than 6,000 miles from Brazil.
Right. That's every year.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, and they actually need us. They really do rely on birdhouses for their process of finding their mates and laying eggs and, you know, getting the chicks to hatch and everything. This year, they have over 500 nesting compartments around the resorts for the birds. Now, last year in their migration season, there were roughly 300 nesting attempts. They had over 1,100 chicks hatched.
Aww.
I know, which was an all-time record for the program. So we're really hoping that this season is also a banner year for them. But another little side note that they, you know, they used also, they tagged the birds, some of the birds, not all of them. And through their GPS monitoring, they found out the adult birds don't always sleep in the birdhouses with their chicks. Mm. That sometimes they spend the night on the highways on light fixtures. Mm. And they're thought...
Sometimes you just need a break from it all. Let's be honest.
That's true.
You know, I just need a
night
need
on
to
the
get
town.
Away from, just for one night.
They really think that that's probably because that the lights are attracting insects so that they can consume those and have produced morning snacks for their chicks.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, just in closing, I hope, you know, we were able to reveal some of the in-park examples of their conservation efforts and help you next time you're experiencing Disney in a park or on a cruise that you kind of also notice, in addition to the magic, there's that efforts to have this sustained magic for generations. And we hope your Earth Day is a little more magical.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And Michelle always does the best job, I guess. I learned so much there that I had no idea before. And Disney does such a magical job of, one, entertaining us and keeping us amused and everything, and yet still trying to make sure that we have a planet that will last that much longer, mm-hmm. that we can, you know, and trying to set the standard for that throughout the
right.
industry, which is amazing, you know, considering that they don't have to do that. They
right.
don't.
Right.
They could go out and just, you know, put out and make sure everything is, you know, we'll just waste and we'll use and everybody will have a great time and it won't matter. But it does. It matters. And it matters that they can still keep up standards. And I know people will complain about the paper straws and this and that,
yeah.
you know. But look, this is important. And if you're concerned about that, there are ways around that to bring your own reusable straw or get a couple straws or whatever. I mean, it's more important than putting that much more plastic. Think about how many straws are used in Disney. Putting that much plastic out in the world.
200 million a year.
Right. Putting that much plastic in the world, there's still way too much plastic in the world. Adding that to the equation as well, it's worth the struggle that you have to go through of sometimes having to drink a shake through a paper straw.
For sure. You know? Yeah, definitely.
But Disney's on top of it. And they're like, you know what? I know this is tough, but you're still going to have an enjoyable trip. And it's more important for this our planet as a whole to make sure that these things are in place. And they do their best to make it as wonderful and magical as possible and still keep up the standards that are necessary to keep this world a green place.
Right. You know, and they do try to do it without impacting the magic for sure. And for the most part, I think they do a great job. You know, and the other interesting thing is this concept of conservation actually lived with Walt. And he's quoted as saying, conservation isn't just the business of a few people. It's a matter that concerns all of us. And so it's great to see that his legacy is being built on. And like I said, today we just talked about kind of some of the examples inside the parks. There's so much more with relationship to how the attractions are built, et cetera, and a lot of other ways, but also the company's global impacts on what they're doing around the world to help with conservation. That could have been another episode or two, but it's just, again, great to see that Walt's legacy is really being expanded.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, if you think of Walt Disney, and yes, you know, maybe this seems like it's more of a new thing, but you go back to the real life adventures and now Disney Nature, you know, where they're looking at all these creatures in areas around the world and exploring them. You know, Disney was one of the first to actually kind of get into that realm and, you know, explore the animal world as a whole.
Right.
And I think the more we get to know our surroundings and know animals and everything, the more you're less likely to try and impact their ecosystems as well.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, Walt was on top of that right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. It's very impressive. I'm glad. Yes. Like you said, Michelle, that they're keeping up with that legacy as they continue on and they're, you know, expanding the parks and moving forward. Yet they're still trying to make sure that this does not affect the planet in a negative way overall.
Right, exactly.
So very good, Michelle. Always does the best research. We hope you have a very, very happy Earth Day. No matter how you celebrate it, hopefully you can go out, maybe pick up a little trash, go plant a tree, maybe just go out and enjoy the outside if you want to do something simple and enjoy the nature and the what is wonderful about our world.
Right, yes. And just, you know, whatever you can do, volunteering at organizations as well is also a really great way to, you know, continue this effort that we're all involved in.
Very good, very good. Michelle's research, always the best research. And that's a look at It's a Small World, Sustaining Disney Magic Through Conservation. Great job, Michelle. As I already mentioned a couple times, her research, always the best research. I always learn so much. And always excites me. And always, every week, I tell you this every time. I don't know where I'm going with this. I don't know if it's going to be interesting. I'm always enthralled. It's fantastic.
Well, you're
good
so
job, Michelle.
You're so sweet. And I'm not trying to be the educator, but I think what I tried to share, like I mentioned last time I did a deep dive, is I want to share with people things that I find interesting because I think they'll find it, or hopefully find it interesting as
well. Even if you don't find everything interesting, you can pick out those nuggets out of every single piece that's like, wow.
Well, maybe you
even know some much of this. Maybe you know 70% of what Michelle talked about. Maybe you are somebody who does your own research. But there's that 30% that's going to be like, wow, I didn't know that that was going on. That's great.
Yeah.
Good news. So, but I think more likely it's like me where I knew like 15% and I learned 85% from this.
You're sweet.
That's Michelle's research right there. Now, before we get to the Disney stories of the week, you know, we have to talk about our great friend Nate with Main Street and More Travel, because let's face it, we all have trips we're thinking about taking in the very near future. Well, if you do, whether it be to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise, or anywhere in the world beyond, let me tell you, Nate is the certified Disney vacation planner that you are going to want to get in contact with.
Oh my gosh, for sure. You know, as we, you know, mention all the time, he really has firsthand knowledge of things, so he can really help you plan customize a trip that is going to be the best for you, answer your questions. It's really concierge level planning that doesn't cost you anything.
High end. It is high end stuff that he will help you out with, answer all your questions. He is there for you to make sure your trip, wherever it may be the best it possibly can be. And as Michelle mentioned, no extra cost to you. That's because either Disney or whatever other travel branch that he works through pays him for you. What you end up paying is exactly what you pay. If you did all that work yourself, only you can save that time and just relax and enjoy and let him set it all up for you.
Right. And you know what? He may even be able to save you some money from you doing it alone because he is on top of all the deals and steals that are out there.
Yeah. And there's never a guarantee, but let me tell you, if there's a discount out there, Nate will find it for you. So what you got to do is go to DizTripsAndMore.com, fill out the form there, and just contact him. Talk to him. Tell him what you want to do and let him get to work for you.
Right. So as Tom mentioned, once you fill out that form, Nate will be back in touch with you to start that planning. But be sure to tell him that Tom and Michelle sent you.
Yeah. Again, that's Nate with Main Street and More Travel. And congratulations to Nate and all the Run Disney runners from this week. Nate did completed the challenge this week and some little higher temperatures than probably were ideal for a Run Disney race, but it looked, when I first heard what the temperature was going to be, like, oh, I'm glad we're not running this race. And then the race has started, and I'm like, oh, I really wish we were running this race weekend. I have so much FOMO, but congratulations to everybody. Despite the temperatures and everything, it looks like you all had a blast. A lot of great characters were out there. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of great pictures. You all are amazing.
Yeah. And we can't wait to be in another one.
Yeah.
And want to encourage people to do it if they haven't considered.
For sure. I think we're pinpointing Princess next year as our next race.
Right.
We'll see about that, but that's what we're pinpointing as our next Run Disney race is the Princess race weekend. So let's go ahead and get to our Disney stories of the week. I do have a few for you this week. I'm going to start with Disneyland takes a giant step forward toward its expansion, so to speak. This came from Deadline.com. They said the Anaheim City Council gave its unanimous approval early Wednesday to Disneyland Forward, the $1.9 billion multi-decade Disneyland expansion plan. The 7-0 vote came early on that day after an 8-hour public hearing that started Tuesday night, during which Anaheim residents, Disneyland cast members, and officials from nearby cities spoke about the plan's advantages and problems. From what I understand, not being there, but I've heard that about 2/3 of the people that spoke were for this plan going forward,
right.
Disneyland Forward going forward. And obviously, so was the Anaheim City Council, unanimous vote.
Right, yeah. And actually, you can go on to the City of Anaheim website, and where they really lay it out nicely, an explanation of all the things that they're supporting will go through
right.
for the city.
So the proposal, which would expand development and add hotel rooms to the theme park by redeploying some 57 acres of parking and unused land, heads for a final city council vote on May 7th. From what we understand, that everyone expects that to fly through just
right.
like this one did. So probably not going to be a stumbling block there at all. It would allow for more attractions, lodging, and other entertainment and attractions without expanding the theme park. So basically, they're not expanding the land of Disneyland. They're
right.
taking areas that they already have.
Right.
And are going to repurpose them into more theme park and hotel and parking areas, essentially.
Right. You know, in looking at some of the maps and everything that they're incorporating, so does it look to you like they're going to be, like some of the hotels, like the Disneyland Hotel will be right adjacent to some attraction type
So
plans?
Or? Concept art is what concept art
right,
is.
That's
you never
true.
Know what the end result is going to be. But this has been what it's looking like since they first put forward the Disneyland Forward plan. And that is that a lot of the areas that are basically parking lots built around the Disneyland Hotel and Pixar Pier.
Right.
Pixar. Is it Pixar Pier Hotel now? I'm trying mm-hmm. to remember what the name of it is
Pixar
now.
Pixar Place, I think.
Pixar Place. Thank you. I was, it used to be Paradise Pier.
Right.
Now it's Pixar Place Hotel. Thank you. There's parking areas around there that aren't used a lot that they're going to, looks like, expand. So that there's going to be a way that basically expands California Adventure Park over to that area mm-hmm. and Disneyland Park over that area. Ways to get around through Disneyland Way or I'm trying to remember what the
Magic
name
Way?
Is. It might be Magic Way. I thought Magic. Well, anyway, the street that's there that connects.
That's Magic Way.
That's Disneyland Drive. Disneyland Drive, yes. So what expands Disneyland Drive right here. That's Disneyland Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Magic Way is part of this. They're taking over Magic Way since that is mostly used by Disneyland.
Right.
Guests, essentially. But Disneyland Drive there, that is the street that goes between the parks, downtown Disney, and the hotels there. Basically, they're going to have either bridges or tunnels. They're going to go through there to kind of lead you from the parks into those areas. And then there's another area where it basically is the Toy Story parking lot.
Right.
That they're going to repurpose that into another area. I think they're talking about some sort of entertainment and hotel district and everything connect that. So, and then they're building a new parking area and this and that. So it's going to be fascinating to see what's all. I'm sure we're going to get real significant details about this at the D23 Expo coming up here, you know, later this year. So it's exciting news. Can't wait to find out what's going to happen, how it's going to expand. But Disneyland needs expansion. There's no room to expand out because it's just owned by people around there. That's just, there's just nothing they can do. So finding ways to work with the property they already own and expand that, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really cool. And like you said, it's just, for the most part, it's just taking parking areas and repurposing them. So this is exciting, and it's really going to be wonderful that Disneyland will be able to have some of the new attractions that, that they've been talking about for a while now. And yet, still within that same area.
Right. I can't wait to see what they are talking about adding. There's been a lot of things thrown out there of possibilities.
Right.
We've already seen the concept art for an Avatar experience of some sort. So that's probably almost certainly as addition to this. But we've heard talk of #RealMenLoveFrozen going in there somewhere. Maybe a Zootopia area. Mm-hmm. All sorts of stuff. D23, the park and experiences panel is going to be off the hook this year.
I know.
It's going to be crazy good. I'm so excited to find out all the news when that comes about. So hopefully if you're attending, you'll be there and get to experience it. Because there's going to be a lot of gasps and a lot of excitement as they break out a lot of this news, both there and there's going to be many more other parks, including, I think, Walt Disney World's going to get a lot of love well. So exciting, exciting stuff. I'm moving on, but staying in the happiest place on earth, a pair of Disneyland tours are set to return very soon. The Cultivating the Magic guided tour and the Disneyland Railroad guided tour will be returning next month to the happiest place on earth. It's really exciting. Yes. I always wanted to do that train tour.
I know.
I'm glad that that's coming back.
Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to next time we're out there, maybe taking that
booking
in.
That for
yes.
sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Always heard very good reviews of that. And so pretty cool.
So here's the kind of some details about these tours if you don't know anything about them. The Cultivating the Magic Tour is, and here's from the Disneyland website. It says, be immersed in storytelling at Disneyland Park, where every little detail, including landscaping, helps to create a living storybook. Explore the magic that comes from plants and flowers, which play a key role in storytelling as they traditionally have at the Walt Disney Company, from the beanstalk that Mickey climbs to the enchanted rose that loses petal one by one. From the moment you pass through the main entrance at Disneyland Park, begin your journey into the theme park's living storybook. Be welcomed by the Mickey floral and then walk through Town Square, where you'll be greeted by cheerful flower beds and hanging baskets full of brightly colored flowers. Stop at the Central Plaza, commonly referred to as the Hub. From here, be guided through a beckoning west of Frontierland, the fairy tale kingdom of Fantasyland, and imagined future of Tomorrowland and the wilds of Adventureland, which is not only home to many exotic plants, but also the Jungle Cruise attraction. And yes, you will get to ride on the Jungle Cruise attraction on this tour. They say, get ready for a wealth of stories. Every plant you're going to encounter along your journey was chosen for its particular tale. Your tour guide will unearth their stories as you travel from the misty Amazon River to South American to the African veldt and other fascinating destinations overflowing with beauty. So basically, it's the plant life that brings these stories to life throughout Disneyland, which we always find stunning and beautiful. And that sounds like a fascinating tour.
Oh, yeah. Just how that incorporates the theming and everything. Oh, that'll be great.
Yeah. And you do get a little gift with it as well. Some sort of, they say some sort of, you know, trinket to go along with you. But that sounds like a really fun tour, especially if you're a horticulturist, if you're into plants, gardens, etc. I mean, this is going to be one that I think is really going to be
for sure
going to be a fan of. Now, Walt Disney was always a fan of railroads. So, you know, the Disneyland Railroad Tour coming back is also exciting. Again, back to the Disneyland description for this tour. They say, get a look into Walt Disney's love for trains and discover the impact it had on the Disneyland Resort. On this eye-opening two-hour tour, sure to delight both Disneyland fans and railroad enthusiasts alike, you'll, one, enjoy a beverage and a pastry to steam your power your way through the Disneyland park, like a little food to kick it off. That's good. Yep. Then you'll walk through the park listening to stories about where the idea behind Walt's train creations first started, understand the impact of trains on the Walt Disney dreams from animation and film all the way to the theme parks. This is where the magic happens for the historic Disneyland Railroad system, and it's not typically viewed by the public. That is the roundhouse where the trains are. So you're going to get to go back to where the roundhouse is, where the trains basically are stored. We've passed by there on some Run Disney races where we've had the chance to go backstage. And it's cool, but you're traveling by there so quickly, you don't really get a good look at it.
Appreciate them, yes.
This is going to be a good look and explanation of how the whole system works, it seems like. You'll learn more about the Imagineers that look after the Disneyland monorail and the trains. So you're going to get a peek at both. Different little trains.
Yes.
And during your guided tour, this is probably the most exciting thing. You'll climb aboard Disneyland Railroad's special presidential car, the Lily Bell.
Nice.
If you know what the Lily Bell is, it's the kind of the caboose, the very elegant caboose car of one of the trains that you get to ride in. Not everybody gets to ride in it. It's pretty specific for this tour.
Yes.
You'll take the scenic route along the rivers of America to see landscapes inspired by four of America's majestic rivers, the Mississippi, the Columbia, the Missouri, and the Rio Grande. Each are carefully recreated, complete with indigenous rock formations, natural forests, wildlife, and five picturesque waterfalls. But again, just riding that train car and doing this.
Right.
You can ride on the railroad, and that's great. And everybody should ride on the railroad, especially the Disneyland Railroad. The Walt Disney World Railroad is great.
Right.
The Disneyland Railroad is spectacular, including a portion that you don't get, which I'm not going to, for those who have not been there, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But there's a big chunk that you won't experience anyplace else.
Right.
It is part of the 64 World's Fair,
exactly, by the way. Exactly. Yes. And that caboose that you were talking about, the Lily Bell, that was named after Walt's wife, Lillian Disney. And it is a very special car that when they're loading it, they don't load people throughout the day onto that car. So,
It's for very special VIPs. And for people who get to go on this tour, that is the only people that get to ride in that car. And it's very elegant from what we've seen pictures of. And something that I desperately want to do.
For sure.
Yes. So both tours will open for booking on April 30th. And the tours begin on May 11th. Just like everything else, you have a 60-day, your window opens to book 60 days out. So know that going in, depending on when your visit to Disneyland is coming up.
Right.
But both tours sound fascinating. And the train tour is one I've been wanting to do for a long time. But I would wish, especially for Flower and Garden, I wish Epcot would do a tour just of what they do out there, the topiaries and all that stuff. I think they used to do something like that. I would love them to bring that back.
Right.
Going through all the plants that they put out there, the topiaries, explaining what goes through creating them and placing them where they do and everything. I think that would be a fascinating tour that I'd be excited to go on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And like I said before, the railroad tour always gets high praise for people who take that. It's early in the morning, but they said it's well worth it. So,
Exciting stuff. I'm glad that those are coming back. Finally, a Disney dining location earns a couple of the highest awards that any dining establishment could receive this week. It was such exciting news.
Yeah, thrilling.
Such exciting news. This came from the Disney Parks blog. They said, congratulations are in order for the incredible team at Victoria and Albert's as they have been awarded a highly coveted Michelin star.
I know. So great.
Yes.
Yes. Congratulations.
So worthy. And it's amazing, actually, that it's taken them this long to actually receive a Michelin star.
Right, right.
Because that food is that quality.
Yes.
Having never dined there, but just everything. From what we understand, mm-hmm. everything about it is Michelin star quality.
Right, right.
So glad that that has happened. Also, the 2024 Florida Service Award for Maitre d' Hotel Israel Perez. So, also someone within mm-hmm. the establishment, getting a highly esteemed award as well. These distinguished honors for the culinary crown jewel of Walt Disney World Resort mark the first time Disney has received this accomplishment, and they couldn't be prouder of the entire team at Victoria and Albert's who have made such a culinary masterpiece at Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. For over 20 years, sommelier Israel Perez, we were just talking mm-hmm. about him, now the recipient of the 2024 Florida Service Award, has been dedicated to creating memorable experiences at signature restaurants across the Walt Disney World Resort. As the maitre d' hotel, Israel has and his team ensured that each person who walks through the doors of Victoria and Albert's has a perfect evening through each step of service. We have not been to Victoria and Albert's. Right. Heard nothing but amazing things yes. about it. We have been to Remy and Enchanté, mm-hmm. Which both have somewhat of that level
yes.
and know what that's like. Even if that is just one, if Victoria and Albert's is 1/10 of what you get there,
right.
it's still just magical. An amazing dining experience.
Yes.
And I know it's Victoria and Albert's is probably even above those restaurants.
Right, right. Yeah. And like we've said, there's no way to describe why it's so special and why the food is so unique and delicious, but it is so different, so amazing.
So in addition to now being the first and only restaurant owned and operated by a U.S. theme park destination to hold a Michelin star,
Yahoo!
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Victoria and Albert's is the sole location in Florida to hold the honor of having both the AAA Five Diamond consecutively since 2000 and the Forbes Travel Guide Five Star Awards consecutively since 2018, and one of only 26 others in the nation with the same unique distinction. So
nice.
That is extremely high honors.
Yes.
It has also been awarded the Wine Spectator Best of Award of Excellence and Florida Trend Golden Spoon Hall of Fame American Regional Awards. So Victoria and Albert's continues to give them. At some point, we will eat there.
Yes.
At some point,
it's hard to get reservations.
It's hard to get reservations, and it's a splurge.
Yeah, oh, my God, yes.
And we splurge a lot to do Remy and Enchanté on the cruise ships, but it's even more so
right, yes.
at Victoria and Albert's. So you have to be like, basically, you need to save up for
it. Yes.
Or use those Disney, what we do for Remy and Enchanté is we use those Disney rewards
right.
points for that. So it doesn't feel like it's money versus money. It's
right.
But it feels like it's maybe just bonus money that
exactly.
Disney is awarding
yes.
these trips to these restaurants to do it. But that's something we're going to do at some point. At some point,
yeah,
we're doing Victoria and
definitely.
Albert's for sure.
Yes.
That's great. Congratulations to the entire
yeah,
team.
Yeah, so happy
here.
For them.
Yeah, very much so. That's it for the Disney stories
of the week. One.
Oh, we missed one. Michelle has a story that I missed. Go ahead, Michelle, because Michelle always has the best stories.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't bring this one up because you saw it before I did. And I know we don't usually talk about merchandising here, but this one was just too cute to resist. But in Disneyland, they're going to be having custom character headbands coming that you'll be able to purchase little character heads to put on and customize your own headband. And I thought those were just too cute.
It's ingenious by Disney. Everybody's going to, as soon as they release a new one, you know, they're going to want to get them and put them in. And there's so many different ways you can make those headbands. And it's smart and it's fun.
Right.
For everybody involved. I love it. And I think it's great. It's a great idea. And I'm glad. I'm surprised they haven't done it earlier. Actually.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But I'm glad it's out now. And that's cool.
Right.
That cool.
Right.
Yeah,
so yeah,
I agree.
Just thought we'd have to make sure we mentioned that. There
Michelle
were other news
stories
in the newsletter.
Best stories. Yeah.
Well, thank
yeah,
you.
There were a few, but those were the big ones, I think,
yeah.
for sure. So, well, speaking of the best of Michelle, well, you just heard it. She does the best research. You know, she has the best list. But one thing is for certain, she always has the best tips. And we never leave you without giving you some sort of tip that might help on your next vacation. And we start with Michelle. So let's get to it. Here's Michelle's tip of the week.
Well, you're too kind. My tip actually has to do with the DVC resorts. As you may know, if you're staying there, that they have outside some grills that you can use for free. But if you are staying there and you do want to use those grills, you probably think, oh, I need tools to use those grills. Well, don't worry. The community hall at the resort will let you borrow grilling tools. So if you do stay there and you want to grill up some steaks or burgers or chicken or whatever, just check over at the community hall and they'll hook you up with the tools. You do need to get your own charcoal, but they sell that in the stores at, mm-hmm. at those resorts as well.
Yep, and also over at Fort Wilderness, which I guess is soon going to be a TVC right. resort anyway. So,
yes.
But yeah, because they remember every cabin there has its own grill. And
right.
So the charcoal right. there, just picking up the charcoal. You don't have to haul all the charcoal out with you. You can just pick it up at the store there.
Right.
Which we have done
they,
many times.
They clean up afterwards.
And they clean it up afterwards, which is always really nice.
Yes.
Nice. Very good. Michelle's tip, always the best tip. My tip is also DVC related, and it actually has to do with something that kind of we talked about already in the show, and that happened to us over this last week plus. And that is the fact that, you know, sometimes you're looking for a date and on DVC, there just aren't any rooms available. Well, that's where your wait list comes in, because yes. you get a couple wait lists, you know, that could be running at any given time. So what we've found is there are a couple of ways to kind of use these the best. And one of the first things that Michelle always does, so I'm really taking Michelle's tip and repurposing it for myself.
Recycling,
reusing, is that you look at these villas, because they will be for sale for cash as well.
Right.
Look and see if there are any rooms at some of these villas that are up on there that you could purchase using cash. A lot of times they'll hold back some rooms. They may look like they're none available using points,
right?
But they'll hold back and they'll get to a point where they'll be like, you know what? We're not going to sell this. There's wait lists. We'll go ahead and give these rooms. So they're not going unused. They'll go to those wait lists. So if you're looking, if I wouldn't just completely bet your entire vacation on
right.
it, but if there's a resort you're really looking to stay, or a week you're really looking to stay, you put a wait list on it. Check on back on this. You never know when they come available. That happened for us recently
right.
with this day. Also, keep track of those cancellation dates, because a lot of times rooms will suddenly become available a little over 30 days out. Usually somewhere between 37 and 30 days out, because you think about people have their vacations
right.
booked. Once you get to that 30-day window, you know there's only certain things you can use those points for. So people will hold reservations, and then they get near that window like, oh, I don't think we're going to make it this time.
Right.
They'll cancel out. Whether you're looking to change your resort or whether you're looking to add on like we just did with the Polynesian, those wait lists at that 30-day window, a lot of times they pop open for
exactly,
you.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, another way, you know, reason of going in and looking to see what cash rooms are available at the villas is it can also tell you if your wait list is probably really not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like if you're looking for a particular room type on a particular set of dates, and on the Disney World website, or if you're looking at Disneyland, it says that there's no availability. You can do the wait list, but you're less likely to get that awarded to you than
right.
if you're looking to find something else that does have some rooms available that they're holding for cash.
Yeah. We did one recently. It was actually because we didn't book a room because we weren't sure we were going to get the Moonlight Magic for Animal Kingdom, which
right.
we're doing this coming week. So we didn't book a room, you know, because it's tough to get the general, you know, entry into that,
right.
you know, when you have a resort stay, you get another booking window to
advanced.
Get that. Mm-hmm. Most of the entries go to them. There's a few available left over for the general, and it's tough to get in and get those ones. However, we got lucky this time, as we talked about last week, we got in there. So we're like, oh, we need to book a room for
right.
that night. So we looked and we're like, there's not really a lot available. See, and then Michelle looked and like, you know what? Saratoga Springs has some rooms available
right.
that are for sale. I'll bet you if we put a wait list on it, we might land one of those. We put the wait list on it. I think it was less than 24 hours later.
Right, yeah.
We got one of those because exactly. It was like 2 weeks out from this event. So they had lots of likelihood that they're going to sell those rooms
during
that time. It worked out for us. It might work out for you. Again, I wouldn't put your whole vacation on it. But if you're looking to possibly find that resort that you want to stay at that doesn't look like it's available or extend your trip or whatever, put it out there.
Yeah.
Use those wait lists to your advantage.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So
that's it for this week's show. Next week, well, there's a topic on the calendar that Michelle has, but I'm calling an audible.
Oh, all right.
Yes. It's the last week of April. April happens to always be the month that we traditionally bring back this topic you put us on the hot seat.
No,
it's Michelle's favorite topic. Yep. It's time for our annual Ask Us Anything show. The show where we rely on your questions for us. If there's anything you want to ask us, it can be Disney related. It could be personal. It could be your favorite Taylor Swift song. I don't care. I mean, there are some subjects we won't get into. We're not political. We're not going to talk about politics or anything on this show. But there's a lot of stuff. We're open for it. You send us your questions. We'll answer them on the show. It's not ask us anything with quotations. Again, within the positivity of this world. We won't steer negative. We are the Disney podcast of positivity.
Right.
We'll stick with the positivity theme. But we love answering your questions because we have new listeners all the time.
That's true.
And some of them don't know us. Some of them may want to know more about us, about their lives, without having to go back and listen to 300 plus episodes. We're happy to answer those questions, and it'll be a lot of fun next week.
Yes, and I joke. It isn't my favorite topic, but it's certainly an okay topic.
I love it. I always find some interesting questions that come out of our Hyperion adventure.
Yes, so
it's
true.
Gonna be fun.
They are great.
Please start sending us your questions. Hit us up on the social media. We'll put out there many posts this week requesting your questions. Hit us up on the Gmail account. You can ask one question. You can ask five questions. We don't care.
Right.
Send them to us. We want to answer them on that upcoming show.
For sure.
As for this week's show, we appreciate that you join us today. In the future, you can find us most everywhere you get podcasts. However, the very best place to find us is on our own website, HyperionAdventuresPodcast.com. Also, we are on social media. We're on Twitter.
I think you mean X.
Nope, I mean Twitter, @ Hyperion Podcast. I just want people to be able to find us on social media. They won't find us on whatever that other thing is. Yeah. Facebook, Instagram, and Threads @ Hyperion Adventures Podcast. If you are on Facebook, come on over and join us for some good positive Disney energy fun on our Hyperion Adventures Facebook group. Also, we're on YouTube. If you want to find us there, we're @ Hyperion Adventures Podcast. And if you ever want to contact us for any reason, please hit us up at our Gmail account, HyperionAdventuresPodcast@gmail.com.
And if you listen to this podcast and really like it, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and possibly review. And we would read that on the air if you do so.
Yeah, we've read other reviews on the show before. You give us a review. We will definitely read it on the show, but assuming you're not ripping us to shreds, maybe not then.
Maybe we'll read it and say, what?
What? What are you talking about? No, we appreciate everybody who's already given us a rating, given us a review. It helps in so many ways for people to find this show. There's algorithm things that we talked about Michelle's non-engineering brain or my non-algorithm brain, that's for sure. But somehow it works to help people find us and know that this is a show that they might enjoy as well.
Exactly.
So thank you for listening to another episode of the Hyperion Adventures Podcast. We look forward to sharing some time with you again next week. Until that time, I'm Tom.
I'm Michelle.
And we hope that you have a magical week.
Bye.